Welcome to Short Hops, powered by rotowire.com. Derek Van Riper here, as always, with Bernie Pleskov. Just over 1 week to go before we reach opening day. Bernie, how's it going today?
Hey, everything's good, DVR. I went out and saw the Rockies today. That's an interesting ball club, and we'll talk about them a little bit later.
Absolutely. Now, the NL West has been, I would say, of all the divisions, probably the most active this offseason, thanks in large part to the Padres. But the Dodgers make another big splash in international free agency, signing Cuban infielder Hector Oliveira. I think that signing went down on Tuesday. 6 years, $62.5 million for a guy who's going to turn 30 years old just before opening day, and really, I think, one that has a lot of questions, Bernie.
Yeah, and you know what? He gets a seventh year for $1 million if he has Tommy John surgery because he's got a torn UCL. So how do you like that?
That's a strange clause to put in there.
Yeah, it's a seventh year. If any time between now and the end of 6 years, I guess, he has Tommy John surgery, they can extend him and pay him $1 million for a seventh year. But it begs the question, DVR, why would you sign an injured player to a six-year deal, and especially one who hasn't played defense for a while?
Yeah, especially as a National League team, it certainly makes you scratch your head. You look at the bat, what he's done most recently in Serie Nacional in Cuba, 316 average, 412 on base, 474 slugging during the 2013-2014 season. He did not play in the 2012-2013 season. So it's been strange in terms of trying to figure out what his market value would be, how he would fit in with a big league team. And now you look at him landing in Los Angeles. Howie Kendrick is a free agent after the season. Most of what I've read about Hector Oliveira suggests that he's more of a second baseman than anything else. So perhaps that's his long-term position, but it still makes you wonder if there's anything they expect from him this year. Could he possibly be an option at third base? But with the elbow injury, it just seems unlikely that he'd be able to handle the physical demands of throwing from third to first.
Yeah, it makes very little sense to us because we're not on the inside. And they have Guerrero, another import for them, who's not playing third base along with Juan Uribe. So it makes for an interesting dynamic. I don't know what his position will be, but if you have an elbow issue, it's going to be pretty tough to throw from third base. So maybe they send him down to the minors to start the season. Maybe he goes to that surgery now. Who knows? You know, only the Dodgers know.
The funny thing, too, with 6 years and $62.5 million before that $1 million one-year option could be added by the Dodgers if he does have Tommy John surgery, we're talking about a player who's 30 years old right now. So after 6 years, he'll be going into his age 36 season. If he doesn't want to play for $1 million in Los Angeles, he could pretty conceivably retire. It's a long way down the road, and we haven't even seen this guy do anything in America yet. So we'll have to see how the Dodgers try to make him fit. You mentioned Alex Guerrero, who always seems to be the afterthought. Any move the Dodgers make just makes you realize more and more that they really don't seem set on finding a role for him. His contract enables him to block being sent down to AAA, which I'm going to assume he'll do because he spent all of last season at AAA, missed the time, of course, when Miguel Olivo bit a chunk of his ear off, which every time I say it still seems completely unreal and just I feel bad for Guerrero because he was hitting. The Dodgers lost infielders last year, and he didn't get an opportunity save for 13 at-bats playing in the outfield in September.
Yeah, that's another weird, strange Dodgers tale. I'll tell you, they have this guy. They're playing him at third base. I saw him there, quite frankly. I like what I saw there. But DVR, tell me the only third baseman last year who got 300 or more plate appearances who hit 300 or more. Can you name him?
It's probably Juan Uribe.
Yes, it is, at 310. With 377 plate appearances. You know, and we don't talk about Juan Uribe, but he's a pretty good third baseman, and let me tell you, he is valued in the clubhouse. So if you have a guy like Uribe at third base, and you've planned for him, now Guerrero takes some of those at-bats, and now you've got another guy who may be breathing down their neck. I just don't get it.
health seems to be a major issue, though, for Juan Uribe at this stage of his career. So having a couple of different options available to play third base doesn't seem like a bad thing. We'll have to wait and see how the Dodgers involve Hector Olivera as this 2015 season gets underway. It could easily be a couple of months at least before he's considered for a role on the roster in Los Angeles. Let's move on to injuries here, Bernie, and we'll stay with the Dodgers.
First, Beltre and Harrison also hit over 300. So I was thinking of Uribe, but of course those other guys did it as well. But Uribe is still a darn good third baseman, and that was my point. Let me ask you a question here. If you're the Dodgers, okay, what is your basic game plan right now when, in fact, I think you need maybe one for sure, maybe two pitchers? So what are you doing to shore up the pitching staff? I know that's not on our agenda today, but I really want to throw that out to you.
I don't know if there's going to be a whole lot they can do short of making a big trade with a team like the Phillies or trying to make a lesser trade with a team like the Mets, one of those teams that has the extra pitching depth. But I wonder if the Dodgers like what they have, if they're happy with Joe Wieland and Juan Nicasio. And part of the reason, of course, that they're in a bind right now is that Hyunjin Ryu will not be ready for the start of the season. Brett Anderson even, I think, was off to a little bit of a slow start in spring training. Wasn't on the same schedule as the team's other starters, but spring training was so long this year, I think he's going to be stretched out enough by the time the Dodgers need a fifth starter. You're right. I mean, the back of the rotation does give you some concern. If Ryu's injury turns out to be serious, I think that forces their hand a little bit. But if it's only a couple of weeks, if Ryu's able to return, say, by the end of April or maybe by the first week of May, I think they can just stay afloat with what they have.
I'm a little bit concerned about that, and I'll tell you why. He has not really finished seasons. He's been hurt. A. B, he's got a lot of innings on those arms from Korea. And C, it's a shoulder. And shoulder fatigue has a tendency to turn into potentially, as we have talked, you know, something more serious. My caution light is on here. I'm not looking April, May. This could extend longer. And if he does come back, is he effective? So now everyone comes up a notch and you slip in a five like Nicasio. What happens if McCarthy goes down? You know, where is their depth? That's my point. I think they need to at least look at somebody else's organization, but pitching is very thin.
Yeah, I mean, I think between Joe Wieland, Juan Nicasio, Brandon Beachy, if he gets back from a second Tommy John, could help in the second half. But yeah, You're not going to get anything from him the first 2 to 3 months of the season, at least. I mean, it may be even longer. He's coming off of two Tommy John surgeries, so you just don't know what he's going to look like once he's pitching again. As far as like a number five starter goes, what about Zach Lee? I know his prospect status has taken a major hit, but is there any chance that he could at least be good enough to fill in and possibly chew up some innings as a back end starter, even if he's not the pitcher they thought he was going to be when they drafted him?
I don't know if they'll go that route. They may look at a guy like Sean Markham, who is who the Indians notified will not be in their rotation. And Sean Markham could be a pretty good five for them if everybody slips up one, because he's throwing pretty well. So there are guys out there. Joel Shoshin comes to mind, but his velocity has dropped 5 miles an hour. So I don't know what they're going to do. And that's why I posed the question. I guess my point is this: the pitching rich Los Angeles Dodgers are no longer pitching rich.
I think they're still front heavy, though. I mean, if you can just get into the playoffs and shorten up the rotation, they're as good as anybody in that instance. But you've got to have it depth wise for 162 games in order to make the playoffs. We mentioned the Ryu injury. I mean, do you like either one of Nicasio or Joe Wieland as that temporary fill in for Ryu?
I've always liked Joe Wieland, but I think these are not the type of guys that you want day in and day out in your rotation until they have shown you over and over again that they've done it. Now, Nicasio has done it in the past. Wieland, not as much. They're options, but they're guys. They are not going to bring fear to any lineup.
Joe Wieland has been hurt. I believe he's had Tommy John surgery at one point in his career, too, or at least had a significant elbow injury. And if you look at this body of work as a minor league pitcher, it was pretty impressive. He's pretty good level to level coming through the system in Texas before he was acquired by the Padres. I think he was part of the Mike Adams deal a few years back.
To the Padres, and then he has been hurt. I've always liked the guy. I always thought that he was going to be a top flight starter, but I have not seen him this spring, so I can't tell you how good or bad he is going to pitch. Nicasio has a track record. You know what you're going to get. And he pitched for Colorado and is no longer there. So what does that tell you?
Just getting out of Colorado is a good thing, though. I mean, Colin McHugh was a guy that couldn't stick in Colorado. Look what he did last year for the Astros. Jason Hamill was a disaster in Colorado. Look what he's gone on to do since getting out of Denver. I mean, I just think sometimes it's a major gain for a player to get out of Colorado. You think about how physically the ball doesn't move the same way, but mentally your approach probably changes quite a bit. You try to nibble more than you should, whatever it might be. Just having that taken away can help you in so many different paths. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Nicasio proved to be a serviceable back-end starter. I liked him even when he was in Colorado. But Joe Wieland, Bernie, for his career in the minor leagues, has 5 strikeouts for every 1 walk. That's outstanding. It's control-based, but it's also a skill set where he's been able to miss some bats. This is a guy who's been kind of underrated, I think, as a prospect, mostly because he's not an ace. I don't think he's ever looked like an ace. He's not necessarily overpowering, but I think he could be a good number 3 starter in the long run, and that might mean he's a good number 5 in the short term.
Yeah, both those guys have possibilities, but neither one of them is Ryu, and that's the problem.
Few other names in the mix. Again, I mentioned Zach Lee, Mike Bolsinger, part of the roster right now for the Dodgers. He was picked up from the Diamondbacks. I think he was a DFA during the offseason. Carlos Frias, another name. But the roster cutdowns are going to happen just about 10 days from now. So once that happens, you have to wonder if Andrew Friedman, who has certainly found his share of players in the scrap heap from his time in Tampa Bay, if he might just find someone else's cast off and actually turn that player into something else of value.
Very possible, but he is really facing some challenges. No question about it. The other one that's on his plate is Andre Ethier, who is not having a good spring, is very expensive, and even if they eat most of the contract, most outfields are set. So there are some issues with the Dodgers. There's no doubt about it.
Bernie, have you ever played the card game Old Maid?
Yeah, when I was a kid.
Yeah, Andre Ethier is the Old Maid card. You're not getting rid of that. That's just not going to happen.
Same thing with Ryan Howard.
Yep, it's another good example. I mean, unless you're willing to really just eat 90% of the contract just to save the other 10%, you're not going to find a team willing to take those guys on right now. Just production versus cost isn't even close to worth giving up anything at all for them at the present time. But, I mean, the Dodgers at this point, they have to pay Andre Ethier either way. They shouldn't force him into the lineup. They should play Crawford. They should play Peterson. They should play Puig. Those guys should be their primary 3 outfielders. They should use Scott Van Slyke when they face lefties. And they should mix in a little bit of Chris Heisey, too. Andre Ethier has no role there. I mean, he is a sunk cost in every sense of the word.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you've analyzed that exactly right. And therein lies the problem of long-term contracts. And you know, they keep giving them. And that's what baffles me. Contract after contract after contract has gone sour, and yet teams still give up these 5, 6, 7, 8 extensive contracts.
It feels like the housing bubble. Like, I don't know when it's going to collapse, but it's not. This doesn't work. You can't keep paying players huge amounts of money for the talent that they used to have. It just generally doesn't work. Free agency often leads to disappointment many, many times. They got to figure something out just to pay guys what they're worth when they're actually worth that. But baseball's got a lot of money coming in right now, so the current system will live on for now. Let's move on to some other injury items here, Bernie. Anthony Rendon dealing with that knee injury. sounds like there's a pretty good chance that he's maybe going to miss opening day at this point. The MRI he had on Monday showed some improvement, but he's still sore, and the knee's bothering him when he hits, which really makes me nervous about targeting him in the first two rounds of my drafts.
Now, let me just say this. This is why he dropped in the draft, DVR, that those same knee issues and health issues. That's why he dropped when he was drafted. This is a terrific hitter and a terrific ball player. And if he doesn't have his legs underneath him, it could be pretty scary, because I have him at the top of the heap everywhere because he's that good. And, you know, I think he'll be second base eligible and third base eligible in a lot of leagues. But if he's not playing, he's not going to do you any good. And he is not going to start the season based on the game I saw on television yesterday when he was sitting in the dugout with his hoodie on.
That's not where you want to be as you move into the back half of March. But with Anthony Rendon, I hope, because I believe in the skills too, I hope he's not one of those players like a Chipper Jones or a Troy Tulowitzki, where year in and year out we're talking about elite talent but poor health. And because of the issues he had at Rice, a lot of ankle injuries he had then, I just have so many concerns about him. And I feel like the market as a whole, many of the drafts I've been in, there's only been a slight discount. It's almost as though, even though people know that he was banged up in college, they don't really know the degree to which he was injured then, yeah, because they didn't have him on their fantasy teams when he was in college. They didn't live that disappointment the way they've lived it with Tulo and Cargo and with Chipper Jones for a long time. Hopefully,
really,
it's not that.
He's really never had his wheels under him. He really hasn't.
And that's why I was so surprised last year. He stole 17 bases.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's
the number that just jumps off the page to me when I look at his stats from last season. He was 17 for 20 as a base dealer, so he was good at it. He was efficient too, but that's probably the first thing that goes if he's dealing with knee and ankle problems as a big league player. We'll see if he makes it back by opening day, but it's looking increasingly doubtful for Anthony Rendon. Matt Wieters had a setback, Bernie. He's coming back from Tommy John surgery. He will begin the season on the DL. My question for you is, how much are you worried about his ability to hit when he comes back? Does this give you some pause? Even if he has to DH and he finds a way to collect the playing time, are you worried that his performance will suffer given that he's experiencing setbacks this spring?
Well, he's got to play to make the best of free agency. So he's got to get back on the field and he's got to hit. We have never really, correct me if I'm wrong, we've never really seen this guy's potential. We've never seen his upside realized. You know, he's been okay, but there's more to this guy. He's a big catcher. He should be able to hit, but he's got to get out on that field to do it. And it's another reason for concern.
Yeah, I'm not that optimistic about him overall this year. I think the fast start he got off to last year was simply that, a fast start. I don't think it was skills growth. I think a lot of his value to fantasy owners, we talked about this when we talked about catchers a few episodes ago, his value comes from logging a lot of playing time. He's near the top end of the games played count, the innings caught, the at-bats among catchers every year. I think that's going to be something that's really difficult for Matt Wieters to accumulate over the course of the 2015 season. Hopefully we'll see him in mid-April or sometime there around, but I just don't know if that's a guarantee at this point. One injured player I've been targeting because the price is so low is Shin-Soo Chu. He's been slowed by a tricep injury recently. He did play catch on Wednesday, hoping to play in Saturday's spring training game, but it may be at least a couple more days, maybe even next week, before he gets a chance to play the outfield in a game again. But Chu's going probably 150 picks later in drafts than he was last year. There were leagues last year he was going top 30, top 40 overall. So I'm not too worried about him from a health standpoint because I'm not paying a premium price for him. But what do you think about Chu as far as being someone who can get back on track and maybe push his way back into the 2020 club this year?
I think the chances are good. He will play, and he will play better than he did before he was hurt. Look, he's got a nice playpen to hit in Texas. He hits from the left side of the plate. He hits at the top of the order. He's going to get a lot of at-bats. I've always liked him. He's going to get on base. He's going to return a profit for you if he's going down at around 150. That's a nice place to grab him because he's going to play.
Yeah, I think the Rangers, because they don't have anyone locked into that DH spot too, they can mix and match a little bit, give him days off from the outfield when needed. Maybe they could move him to left field too. I guess that's one other way they could maybe take some of the wear and tear off of his arm. But I really like his chances of rebounding this season, even though he has been dealing with this injury this spring. Miguel Cabrera playing first base for the first time today. Definitely trending in the right direction as opening day approaches. Miguel Cabrera still a top five player for you overall, Bernie?
No, there's no doubt. As I said on the radio today, if you see him hitting the ball to center field, he's back. That means his legs are out under him. That means he's driving the ball. When he hits the ball to center field, he is squaring up the ball. He's seeing the ball. His eye-hand coordination and bat speed are back. He is not impacted by his trunk, which was the issue last year. He starts hitting the ball too much to right field. That's a concern for me. So I have not seen him play. This is now his first week back. I will try to watch him, but Cabrera is still a lethal hitter.
I suspect we're going to see a decent amount of Cabrera over the next 10 days or so as the Tigers try to really make sure he's ready to go for opening day. Red Sox closer Koji Ihara has been slowed by a hamstring injury. He may not be ready for opening day. Thinking about the way Koji Ihara's season ended in 2014, August, September were pretty rough. And even with that, his walk rate was outstanding. Just one of those things, you look at the number and it looks like video game numbers, because that's just how good Koji Ihara was even after blowing up in the final 2 months of the season. Are you buying him at a discount still?
No, I think I'm selling him. You know, I have a decision to make in grass ball with Uehara, and it scares me because there's a double whammy here. It's the hamstrings and it's the age. Those two things do not bode well in my mind, and I worry about them both. Yes, he's an extremely good closer. And by the way, I don't know who closes if he doesn't. I don't know if who it is, to tell you the truth. However, I don't think he's going to start the season. I think those hamstrings are going to be an issue. And if he starts, I don't know how effective he's going to be landing and using his entire body and his one. You know he's got an electric arm. It's not the arm. It's the hamstrings. It's the age. I don't know what to do with this guy.
Yeah, I look at his numbers. I look where he's been going in drafts, and I'm always tempted to take him, but I'm always scared off when my pick comes up and I'm looking at him as my best available reliever. I tend to go another direction. I go to another position and let somebody else take the risk. At 40 years old and with a couple of health concerns, I think I'm backing off him a little bit too. If he falls, maybe after the first 15 closers are off the board, I would think about it, but I haven't seen him fall quite that far yet. As far as his replacement goes, even though I wouldn't make Edward Mujica the closer without Koji Ihara, that's what the Red Sox seem inclined to do.
I said a couple weeks ago.
That's where they go. That's what they do.
Yeah, you know, Derek, the risk reward is tilting way too much to risk on Uehara for my tastes, and I'd rather play it safer. And there are safer guys out there, but we know that with closers, they could come and go. They could lose their job instantly. They can get hurt. They can have bad years. So you're really rolling the dice with closers. But if you go into the season knowing this guy has hamstring problems and knowing the guy is 40 years old and knowing he tanked in the second half of last season, what does that tell you? It tells me to be very cautious. Even though he's a $7 player for me, I'm not sure I want to take one of my nine pitchers and call him Koji Uehara.
Well, if you decide you don't want him, let me know. At $7, that might be a low enough price where I would take the chance. It's going to be right on the fringe, so let me know what you decide there.
Yeah, see, that's my dilemma. It's very on the fringe. That's a very good point. You know, a dollar more, $2 more, and the decision's made. But $7 is an attractive price.
That's why I think it's all a matter of format. In an auction or in a keeper setting, I'd be a lot more likely at a price like that to say, okay, well, let's just see what we get from him. Maybe I'm going to get 15 or 20 saves, but when he pitches, the ratios will be outstanding. But in a snake draft, if I have to use, let's just say in the NFBC main event, it's a 15-team mixed league, if I have to use my sixth-round pick, on Koji. I'm not going to do that. So it's just a matter of what you have to give up in order to either retain him or to acquire him in your draft or auction.
Okay, but bear this in mind. If you have 2 to 3 closers on your 9-man pitching staff, and this guy misses a month, okay, what do you do to make up for those saves?
Hope that Mojica is the guy and pick up Mojica, I think.
If you can.
Yeah, if somebody else doesn't outbid you for him.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what makes this so much fun, because you have to figure out what your breaking point, what's your dollar amount, and what are you comfortable with. Now, as soon as we're done with this show, Derek and I will be talking Koji Uehara, because I will try to trade him to Derek, and I'll ask for something in return. And then the problem will be his.
Yeah, right. Koji Uehara will become my problem in grass ball. A couple more injury items to get to here, Bernie. Garrett Richards, making some progress from that knee surgery. 53 pitches, 4 hitless innings his last time out. It seems like an April return is actually very likely. I'm starting to move him up my board here as we move into the final weeks of draft season.
Yeah, I never dropped him, and I kept him in one of our leagues, DVR, because I felt that he was going to miss a start, maybe 2 at the most, and then he's still going to be the Richards of old. And remember, it wasn't his arm, it was his knee, right?
Yeah, but I was just thinking back to the knee surgery Derek Holland had last year and how long it took him to get back. So for me, when the Angels were saying that April was a possibility, I was having a difficult time taking them at their word.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that. And just like folks, don't forget, it's not Stroman's arm, elbow, shoulder, it's his knee. So Stroman's out for a while, but when he comes back, he doesn't have to worry about blowing out his arm because his arm will be solid.
Yeah, I think with Stroman, he'll have a full offseason to kind of progress through a normal routine, too. It's not as though he suffered the injury in September, had to rehab for most of the offseason, and then was starting his throwing program late. You know, I think that's something that'll help Stroman in his recovery. Even though the injury is extremely unfortunate, the timing should enable him to have a relatively normal progression into 2016. Last injury item to get to, Nick Franklin, to miss the start of the season.
Yeah, what a shame.
He's got an oblique injury. He was going to be the starter at second base as part of a platoon with Logan Forsythe. Question for you is just this. Do you think Nick Franklin will consistently hit big league pitching? Can he be a 260 guy that hits 15 home runs at second base or something in that range? Or do you think he's going to struggle?
I've seen him do it. And the answer is yes. He's one of my guys. I've always liked his swing. I've always liked his stroke. He's very Chisenhall to me. You know, same type of guy. Struggle, find it, struggle again. That's going to be Nick Franklin. You're going to love him and you're going to kill him. But the days you love him, you're really going to love him because he's going to hit the gaps and he'll hit some balls over the fence. He's got a sweet swing, but that oblique is an issue. He'll be back, but he'll be up and down for you just like Lonnie Chisenhall.
We're going to move into some job battles here. I'll kind of explain the situation. You let me know if you like the players involved and what their chances are of retaining the job all season long. Brett Cecil is going to be the closer in Toronto because of the aforementioned Marcus Stroman injury. Aaron Sanchez moving into the rotation. Does Cecil have more saves than the rest of the Blue Jays relievers this season, or is it the field that actually gets more saves in Toronto?
I think it's Cecil if he's healthy, but that's a big if. You know, he hasn't pitched a lot, I don't think, this spring. I want to see, I think the job is his. I don't think there's any doubt about that. At least that's what one of their scouts told me. However, is he gonna be healthy? If he is, okay. He's a guy that I might pick up late in the draft. He's in the Koji Uehara conversation for me because of injuries. Sanchez has to go into the rotation. That's where they want him. That's where they wanted him. And I don't think he was ever in the closer's mix, despite what I've said in the past and you've said in the past. They've always wanted this guy to start.
Well, he's a lot more valuable if they can get 180 or 200 innings from him. But
no doubt.
The question for me, and I've probably even asked you this already once this spring, but I want to drive it home for people listening out there. Do you expect Sanchez to maintain the improved control he showed after switching to a relief role last year? Because that was the big difference for him once he was promoted. The walks went way down, and the walks were a huge problem for him as he moved through really the entire system for the Jays.
It's going to be youthful inconsistency. And Derek, he's pitching at a place where he's going to be looking over his shoulder and watching the ball fly. That gives me pause. It's a tough park to pitch in. It's not Colorado, but you know how the ball travels in Toronto. You know, it's gonna have an impact. There's no doubt in my mind.
I think he throws a heavy enough ball, though, where the home runs aren't going to hurt him as much as they'll hurt guys like, you know, Marco Estrada, who's the complete opposite.
No, definitely Estrada. Definitely Estrada.
Marco Estrada, compared to Sanchez, like, if Aaron Sanchez is throwing bowling balls, Marco Estrada's throwing wiffle balls, and you know, that's not a good place to throw wiffle balls. Moving on to the Arizona rotation, Ruby De La Rosa, the latest starter to receive a spot. He's had some control issues this spring. Is this the right move?
I don't know how long it's going to last. I really don't. If he doesn't throw strikes, it's going to be a long season. And you've already got the top of your rotation is Josh Coleman, a good pitcher, a 3 or a 4 or even a 5 on some staffs. So that's why De La Rosa is there. They are not deep. And Archie Bradley is not going to start the season in the rotation. He needs more seasoning. I don't know what they're going to do with Trevor Cahill. This is a team with lots of questions. De La Rosa, if he throws strikes, he's got great stuff. I have seen him walk 4, 5, 6 guys in 3 innings, believe it or not.
I see De La Rosa as a late-inning bullpen arm. I don't think he's going to stick as a starter. I think by June, he could be a shutdown reliever this year. I think by June, he makes the role change. By the second half, maybe he's one of the better relievers in the National
That's
League.
Randall Delgado, they already have that.
I think Delgado's the long man, though. I think De La Rosa's more of like a 7th-inning, 8th-inning guy.
I don't know.
What are they going to do with Tomas, by the way?
That's the million-dollar question. Now, let me tell you what I would do with him, and then I'll tell you what I think they're going to do with him. If it's me, he plays the first month or so in the minor leagues in AAA, and he plays third base every day if that's what they want. However, if they put him in the outfield, you've got Trumbo and Tomas in the outfield. Pollock is going to run his buns off. It's going to be very tough on Pollock. I don't see an outfield of Tomas, Pollock, and Trumbo. I see him as their third baseman. He's got to make some progress. The only way to do that is to go down and play every day where the defense is not going to hurt you. Or they're going to play him at third base and just bite the bullet thinking, you know what? We'll make him into a third baseman. It's a very, very difficult situation they face, and one that they probably didn't realize that the conversion is very tough. It's not only converting to third base, it's converting to America. And, you know, there's a lot of issues there.
Yeah, I think he should start the year in the minors, maybe even at Double A, just to see how he handles the pitching there. I mean, he hit 250 this spring, a couple of home runs, 10 strikeouts against one walk. I mean, the numbers really haven't been all that great, but at the same time, you can't write them off based on 12 or 14 Cactus League games. Just looking at their roster, it's sort of like the Hector Olivera signing for the Dodgers. I don't get it. I don't understand why they signed him. I know this is a team that needs to kind of re-earn some trust with the fan base, prove that they're willing to spend money. They did a lot to overhaul the roster, made a handful of trades. But Yasmani Tomas does not look like the right fit for them. Jake Lamb should be the everyday third baseman, or at least against right-handed pitching, so on the big side of a platoon. There's questions now at short. Maybe Nick Ahmed's the starter to begin the year because Chris Owings is coming off of shoulder surgery. But now you're burying Ender Inciarte and David Peralta if Tomas can't play third. Both Inciarte and Peralta are having a good spring. Both played well last year. Both are good defenders. Tomas, I don't think he's even going to be a good defender if he's an outfielder.
See, and that's the dominoes. That's how the dominoes fall. And you're building, another analogy, you're building a house of cards. And when you put that last card on the deck, it all collapses. And that card is Tomas. You know, the Dodgers did it with Yasiel Puig. They sent him to AA. And it certainly didn't kill Puig. And I don't think it'll kill Tomas. It may help him slow down a little, and all eyes are on him. The pressure must be immense. The pressure just has to be immense. not only on him as a player, but on the front office, Derek. They have problems at catcher, pitcher, and third base. And they have very good middle infielders if they played Ahmed at short and they played Owings at second. They could play Aaron Hill at third, too. And they could have a platoon with Lamb and Hill. A lot of options in the infield. Very few options behind the plate and on the mound.
Yeah, I'm looking at what they could have done this offseason if they had not signed Yasmani Tomas. There wasn't much available on the market in terms of catchers. It was Russell Martin, and that was pretty much it. But $68.5 million for Tomas, and it's more money, it is longer in terms of duration, but it's more money than Victor Martinez got from the Tigers. Victor Martinez really can't play defense short of playing first base. Arizona has a first baseman. If they really wanted a third baseman, Chase Headley got $52 million from the Yankees. I'd rather have Chase Headley playing third base and hitting in Chase Field than Tomas kind of causing a logjam in my roster.
I heard it today, and I forgot who said it. You know, among all of these Cuban players, one or two of them or three of them are not going to live up to their billings. You know, who's it going to be? Is it going to be the new shortstop, the new third baseman outfielder? Who's it going to be? But it just can't happen that these guys come in here and become Yasiel Puig overnight, or even, you know, Cespedes or Abreu. Those guys are super athletes. Tomas is not the athlete that those guys are. He's very thick in the body. He looks very slow in his reaction time. It just isn't coming natural to him, and I frankly don't know how fair it is.
Yeah, it's an extreme amount of pressure that is on a player like that to come in, hit right away. He is just 24 years old, too, so sending him down, again, maybe isn't the worst possible thing. Give him a couple months to get everything kind of acclimated in America, and then you bring him up in maybe May or June, and suddenly you know if he's definitely an outfielder or if he can actually hold his own at third base. But I don't know. I'm very confused by the Diamondbacks with Tomas, and we'll see what they do. A couple of left field situations up for grabs, Bernie. Braves left field job, wide open. Rangers left field job, wide open. Any value in your eyes coming from either one of those spots?
Yeah, I think Rua in Texas is going to get a lot of playing time. Smolinski is going to get playing time probably. But the guy I like is Rua. I think he'll get a lot of playing time in left field for Texas. He's a versatile guy. He can play third base. He can play the outfield. They like him, and I can see why. He puts the bat on the ball. Good doubles hitter with some home runs. He's a guy to watch, and I think he wins at least part of the platoon.
At least cheap power for AL-only leagues.
Yeah, now, I think so.
I like Rua the most of the bunch, too. I could see that spot, whoever has it, actually being somewhat valuable because I think the Texas lineup will rebound having Shin-Soo Chu and Prince Fielder both healthy this season. But looking at the left field spot for Atlanta, for now, Eric Young Jr. is going to play center field. He's really ideally suited to play left. I think it's probably Zoilo Almonte who gets the larger side of a platoon with Johnny Gomes. If I'm in an NL-only league, I'm thinking about Almonte as a $1 or $2 player at the very end of my auction.
Yeah, I would not take any of those guys. I just think the Braves are in deep trouble offensively, and that's a perfect illustration of a problem. That's left field. I don't know what they're doing, and I think they're preparing for their new stadium, building pitching. I think their pitching will be okay. It's just that I don't know how they're going to score runs.
You know, thinking about the Braves, they need outfielders. The Diamondbacks have too many outfielders. Diamondbacks maybe could use a catcher. The Braves have a few catchers. Maybe there's a trade there.
Except that the Diamondbacks have said, we are very happy with Tuffy Goswich. Gerald Laird is probably their backup guy, and they're not looking for a catcher. Go figure.
I felt like the comments Dave Stewart made about Tuffy Goswich being the starter, though, were a pretty tepid endorsement of his ability to actually hold onto the job long term. We'll see what happens there. A couple other situations to monitor, both with the Yankees. Adam Warren appears to be the number five starter. They've had injuries this spring, Chris Capuano among them. He's going to miss some time. So Adam Warren, who pitched well out of the bullpen last year, appears to be the number five starter. I think he's okay for an AL-only type league.
I agree.
Still no closer named in the Bronx. Dellin Betances costs a lot more in drafts and auctions right now. Do you pay the premium for him and hope that he gets the bulk of the opportunities, or do you roll the dice on Andrew Miller, who's been a lot cheaper?
I think it's a mix and match. I think it's going to be depending upon who's coming up in the ninth, and I think they're both going to get chances to close, at least in the month of April, partly in May, and they're going to roll the dice and see how it is. It's a great problem to have. They've got a lefty, they've got a righty, and they can mix and match. One of them can pitch the eighth, which Betances is used to. So is Miller. One of them can pitch the ninth on any given night. I think they're going to share it. Not a big three-man committee, a two-person committee based on matchups. Not a bad idea.
Yeah, I think if they actually do play the matchups, that's the ideal way to use those two relievers. I'm still a little bit hesitant to buy into the idea that that's exactly what the Yankees will do, even though it could be an option for them. I feel like Joe Girardi, for some reason, is going to land on one guy.
He may. He's got a week left.
And if I had to guess who it was, I agree with the masses. I think Betances would probably get that nod over Miller. But I like where Miller's going in drafts and auctions. He's cheap. He's worth taking the chance on because even if he's not getting saves, gets a lot of strikeouts for reliever. It should get you good ratios too.
And he's going to get holds if your league counts holds. Either one of these guys is worth having on your club because they're both very quality back end of the bullpen guys. Very high quality.
So real quick, before we move on to our corner infield rankings, Bernie, you mentioned as we started our podcast today, you saw the Rockies recently, even today, probably even a couple times because they're at Salt River. Who wouldn't want to go to Salt River and watch the Rockies? What have you seen from Colorado this spring?
I saw Tulo hit the heck out of a ball today. I had talked to him in the dugout before. It was ring presentation day for the AFL guys, and they were kind enough to invite me to do a story about it. So I got a chance to talk to Tulo in the dugout, who had played in the AFL. He looks very healthy to me. This guy is on a mission. He doesn't like the buzz about him, you know, his health and Cargo's health. I think these guys are showing up early. They're hitting. They're playing. Tulo has three home runs. This was a rocket today. It got out in no time. And he made great defensive plays. He gives up his body playing defense, DVR. And, you know, that's part of the reason he gets hurt. This is a very good ball player.
Yeah, I think if Tulo and Cargo, if you get 130, 135 games from both of those guys, this Rockies team could turn things around in a hurry. That's been the story for them really for the last couple of years. They've been kind of simmering as a possible sleeper. You add in Nolan Arenado, Charlie Blackmon, Corey Dickerson. Still have Justin Morneau at first base.
Nowhere for second, who can hit.
Yeah, and he's a good defender, too. I mean, they've got more options behind the plate. They do have some depth in the outfield. If they lose any outfielders with Stubbs and Brandon Barnes, maybe even Kyle Parker as an option out there. Bullpen, maybe a little bit of a question mark, but I do like Adam Ottavino. I do like Jairo Diaz. They've got a couple of arms that could be pretty useful. And it seems like they're trending towards making both Eddie Butler and John Gray a part of their rotation. Tyler Matzek pitched well down the stretch last year. I think Jordan Lyles has proven he can be okay, even though he has to pitch half his games at Coors Field. I'm not a Kyle Kendrick guy at all, but he's kind of the new elder statesman there with Jorge De La Rosa banged up.
And let me tell you a couple things I heard today that were interesting to me. One of the options is to farm out Willene Rosario and let him play first base and learn. He admits that a play is going to happen where his footwork is going to be messed up at first base, and that's pretty much where he is now. He's a first baseman. He is the third catcher. Now imagine how his stock has dropped. And we always said he wasn't a good defender, but now they've come to the realization that Nick Humley is their catcher, and Willene Rosario is a backup first baseman to Justin Morneau, and can he play the position? So if you're a Willene Rosario guy, you can count on much fewer at-bats, and be careful in auctions or drafts. He's just not going to get the playing time.
Yet.
The other thing I heard was about Shaheen, why he was dropped. He has lost 5 miles an hour on his fastball. He's coming in the mid to high 80s, straight as an arrow, straight as a string. And they, you know, they don't want that. And they just released him. And so far, he hasn't been picked up.
So it also saves them a lot of money, too. There's a cutoff in March where if you release a player, you only owe them a portion of their guaranteed salary for the upcoming season. Chassin, I think, is a guy that had still been going through arbitration. So I don't know the ins and outs of the rules, but I know they did save some money by letting him go when they did. One thing I've noticed, or was brought to my attention, I should say, by a former colleague of mine, Michael Beller, who now works for Sports Illustrated. Jock Peterson has changed his hand position in his batting stance. If you look compared to last year, his hands are much lower. Seems like it's a lot better in terms of shortening up his swing. My colleague Mike, again, he compared the changes that Peterson made to some adjustments that Anthony Rizzo made a couple seasons ago. That could be a pretty big difference. If Jock Peterson cuts back on the strikeouts, he could be a very dangerous player right away here in his first full season with the Dodgers.
I agree, and I must say I've not seen enough of Peterson to know the before and after. I just saw him this spring, so I really don't know. I saw a little bit of him in the past, but I didn't notice any difference. I just like the way he centers balls. You know, there isn't any doubt about the way the ball comes off his bat. He's a good player. He's a good hitter. He's a good fielder. The job is his. He can rest assured. He's not getting yanked. He's a good player.
I saw him hit that opposite field home run last season at Camelback. That kind of made me think twice about him because you just don't usually see young players, especially young lefties, go right down the left field line with power. But that's something that Jock Peterson showed in that game I saw a year ago. Really encouraging to see him possibly cut back on those strikeouts. Had a great spring too, which I'm not a big spring training stats guy, but at the same time, if you're having a good spring, it's certainly not a bad thing. Let's move on to our corner infield rankings, Bernie. We're going to start at first base. Top 15 at first base. We'll do our top 15 at third. We'll talk a little bit about some DHs, and then we'll have to sign off. Tonight is the night of the Beat DVR League in the RotoWire Online Championship. We'll see if anyone can beat me this year. I got walloped love in 2014, but I did pretty well in 2013, so hopefully it's a bounce-back season. Number 15 on my list, Brandon Belt. Very important player for the Giants. Missed a lot of time last year with injury, but I think you're going to get a good mix of average, maybe 18 to 22 home runs, and a lot of runs driven in now that Pablo Sandoval is gone, because I think Belt's the guy that's going to follow Buster Posey in that batting order.
And you're going to get some outfield eligibility as well, simply because I think he's going to play there. I think they're going to have to do it. Pagan played today, by the way. So we'll see. But I think during the season, Belt's going to be eligible in the outfield. In most leagues, it takes 5 games, some 15. I think he'll play in the outfield, and I think he'll play first base. Did not make my list, and I'll tell you why. I'm looking at pure first baseman, and that's Belt. Posey is not a first baseman. He's a catcher, so he's not on my list. But with Belt, I worry about that lineup. The more I see it, the more I think that they are really going to scuffle to score runs, and I don't know that Belt's going to see any pitching. So he did not make my top 15. Carlos Santana is in the 15 slot for me. Bad batting average, good on base percentage, lots of nice home runs and doubles, nice RBIs, the only bad category, batting average. But if you're in a league where on base counts, the guy walks incredibly, has a great number of walks.
Yeah, I've got Santana just a little bit higher. I think you're right. If you're in an OBP league, he gets a bump. I'm also going to rank him as a third baseman, though, because that's where he's most valuable in terms of his rotisserie value. I've got Lucas Duda right next to Brandon Belt. Duda at 14. Hopefully the oblique issue he's dealt with this spring is completely behind him, but he crushes right-handed pitching. It's amazing that he was in the shadows of Ike Davis as long as he was, but I think Lucas Duda's power is for real. The batting average might be a tick on the low side, but I like what the Mets have done with their offense. I think he's maybe a sneaky candidate to hit 30 home runs again with 90 to 100 runs driven in.
I have Lucas Duda at 14 as well for one reason and one reason only. That's the home runs. you know, in a game where power is slipping away quickly, Duda's going to hit him, and he's going to hit him in a tough park. I like him at 14.
I've got Victor Martinez up at 13. He would be higher if it weren't for the knee injury. I know he's progressed well so far, but I worry that he's just not going to be healthy all season long. He talked about Koji Yahara in age and how that could be a problem for him. I think it's going to be a problem for V-Mart at times this year.
I did not rank him because for me he's a DH, and I don't know if he'll play first base at all. I don't know when he's going to play there with Cabrera around. He's a DH for me, so if he were ranked, he'd be higher than that. My 13 is Adam LaRoche because I think he's going to make a huge difference in Chicago. Nice ballpark for his swing. Nice lineup for him to be in. Half the time at first base, maybe three-quarters of the time, a quarter of the time at DH. Adam LaRoche is going to go off in Chicago.
Adam LaRoche, one of the first guys who didn't make my list. First base, actually, pretty deep right now in terms of at least having cheap power. I definitely like LaRoche, but just like these guys a bit more. I've got Justin Morneau at number 12. Look at his numbers last year in Colorado. He wasn't just the byproduct of playing half his games in Coors Field. He was a 300 hitter both home and away. He slugged 475 away compared to 515 at home. I think there's still a little bit more there. Maybe another 20 home run season in the bat, but even if it's not there, the batting average should be there, and we should get a lot of runs driven in from Justin Morneau.
I've got him higher than you do. At 12, I've got Joey Votto. That's probably where I think he fits. You're not going to get the home runs. We know that. We've talked about it. You're going to get the RBIs. You're going to get the runs. You're going to get the batting average. You're going to get the on-base percentage. I like him at 12.
I've got Freddie Freeman up at 11. I think the problem with Freeman is similar to what you described with the Giants lineup. Who is he going to drive in? Who's going to get on base in front of him? Who's going to drive Freddie Freeman in? So where are the runs going to come from? Where are the RBIs going to come from? Are there going to be instances where he can take intentional walks because Chris Johnson or Zoilo Almonte or Johnny Gomes is hitting behind him? I think all of those issues have lowered Freddie Freeman's value for the upcoming season.
I agree, but I have him at 11, and at 12 I have Chris Davis simply because I'm not sure. I took him very high in an auction. I paid a lot of money for him in an auction because he's back on, Adderall?
Adderall, yep.
Yeah, and I think that will help him. But you know what? He's a real question mark for me. Which Chris Davis do we get? We've talked about this before. Is it Texas, Baltimore, Baltimore, Texas? What is it? I don't know. So Chris Davis is at 11. He's still dangerous.
I've got Votto at 10 and Chris Davis at 9, so we're not real far off. And if you look at the overall ranks, Davis, Votto, Freddie Freeman, all within 8 spots of each other. So I think it's a matter of what you're trying to do with your team. Although, as constructed, I think Votto and Freeman are actually more similar, whereas Davis is going to be possibly like a 245, 250 hitter, albeit one that could probably get you 35 home runs. I think the oblique injury, in addition to not having the Adderall exemption last year, was a really big part of his struggles, especially in the first half.
Yeah, I love the Orioles. I like the ballpark for him. I've got Freeman next, and down at the next slot, I've got Justin Morneau. So I believe in Justin Morneau. I love the ballpark. I love the wind tunnel in right center. I think he can do it on the road and especially at home. He's not an old guy. We think he is, but he isn't. Justin Morneau is still a dangerous hitter, especially in Coors.
Could be one that's targeted by a contending club if the Rockies fall out of the race midseason, too. Morneau in the final year of a 2-year deal with Colorado. Albert Pujols is number 8 for me. Not much of a difference between 8, 7, and 6, but Pujols at 8, I think he can still hit. Average might not be as high as it used to be, but the RBI count should certainly be there. He should crack triple digits in that category. Should be in the mid-20s range for home runs. Maybe even still sneaks in a few steals. And because of the quality of the Angels lineup, wouldn't surprise me if he pushes 80 to 85 runs scored as well.
That's where I have Eric Hosmer, simply because I think this is a new Eric Hosmer. This is a guy who found himself last year, and I don't think he wants to go back to where he was. It took those guys, the Moustakas of the world, the Gordons of the world, the Hosmers of the world, a long time, but I don't think they want to go back to where they were. I think Hosmer's going to give you a nice season.
I'm worried about the power because I'm not sure he's more than a 15 to 18 home run guy, so he didn't make my top 15. I've got him a little bit lower. It depends on the makeup of your team in the middle rounds, though, if you're willing to take on Hosmer. Maybe there's more there. Maybe he can still hit 20 to 25 in his peak years. Still very young because he got to the big leagues so quickly. Adrian Gonzalez is at 7 for me. As I mentioned before, not much of a difference in terms of what I expect from him than Albert Pujols. The reason I have Gonzalez ahead of Pujols mainly is health. Gonzalez hasn't had that plantar fasciitis issue that Pujols dealt with, so I see a little less health risk with Gonzalez. Pretty similar lineup situation, a pretty similar average and power production expected from both players.
I'm with you there. I've got him at 7. He's a dangerous hitter. You still have to navigate around those guys, and it's going to be tough to do. Tough park to hit in, but I love Adrian Gonzalez at 7.
I've got Prince Fielder at 6. Part of taking him ahead of Gonzo and Pujols really hinges on what I have in my roster with those first couple of picks, because if I have one of like Tulo or Ryan Braun or one of those early round picks that has some injury risk, I might go a little bit safer and take Gonzo over Fielder. But assuming that I've got a pretty normal amount of risk already in my roster, I think Fielder is going to get back to being vintage Fielder, the player we expected him to be when the Rangers acquired him prior to last season.
I saw him yesterday, Derek. He did not make my top 15.
Interesting.
I am not drinking the Kool-Aid yet. I think the bat is slower. I don't see that much improvement. I'm going to watch him again. He's on my schedule 2 more times. I really have to see more of him, but he didn't make my top 15. This is where I put Albert Pujols, because I did see him yesterday, and he clobbered the ball. When you have Mike Trout and Pujols back-to-back, and I think they should be 3 and 4 instead of 2 and 3. I've said that a lot. But if he's hitting 3 in the lineup, Pujols, this guy is still really dangerous. And the dead center field, Pujols is going to be a force to be reckoned with.
I got a pretty big jump from Fielder, Gonzalez, and Pujols to my next guy. I've got Edwin Encarnacion at 5. The top 5 first base on my list are all top 12 players overall, all guys I would think about in the first round. I love the fact that Edwin Encarnacion can walk as much as he strikes out, sometimes even walks more than he strikes out. Batting average is really the only category compared to the top 5, the other top 5 first basemen, where I worry a little bit. But we're talking more like 270 range as opposed to 280, 290, or even 300 that some of the other guys ahead of him can hit. Love the environment. Think he's going to give you 30-plus home runs again, at least triple digits in RBIs, maybe even like 120, 125 is a possibility. Really like Edwin Encarnacion.
That's where I have him, and we're going to have the same top 5. He's 5 for me would be better, but he's a serious injury issue problem for me. I don't know if he can stay healthy, and if he can, the sky's the limit for him. But he's missed time in the past, and I worry about that, but he's still a great hitter. And in that park, and now with Donaldson in the lineup, makes him even better.
Yeah, it should help him even score more runs because they've got better depth behind him.
Amazing.
Loaded lineup right now in Toronto. Anthony Rizzo checks in as my 4th-ranked first baseman. The only difference between Rizzo and Jose Abreu for me, well, actually, there's one other slight difference. I think Abreu's a little better at using the entire field, so I could see more batting average from him. But I also prefer having a guy that hits in the cell as opposed to Wrigley Field. I think the White Sox lineup also just a little more polished right now than the Cubs, who are still relying on a lot of young hitters.
I have a Jose Abreu at 4. I see a little bit of regression there. Not a lot, but there is some in my mind. I think the sophomore jinx won't come into play, but the numbers won't be as great because I think pitchers will be savvy against him. LaRoche is going to help in the lineup. They have some big hitters in the lineup. Abreu at 4. I'm comfortable there. And I have Rizzo at 3. This guy broke out last year. You know, I don't know. Think of Rizzo and Bryant hitting back-to-back DVR. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Who did you pitch to?
Good luck. It's kind of like the Trout-Pujols combination. At least it has the potential to be that dangerous because Chris Bryant looks like something from another planet right now. I mean, he's been red hot this spring. 9 home runs in Cactus League play for Chris Bryant. At 2, I've got Miguel Cabrera. He would be 1 if it weren't for the concern about his ankle. I still have a little bit of worry there, but he's definitely trending in the right direction, as we talked about earlier.
I've got Cabrera at 2. I've got Goldschmidt at 1. And I'm worried a little bit about Goldschmidt's home runs dropping off, only because the lineup is not strong around him. It's a shame that I have to say that, but there really isn't a lot of protection for him. I don't know if he's going to see pitches, but he's smart enough not to chase. He's just a great ball player. I wish him well, but I wish they had some more pop around him.
We're going to try to get through our third base rankings here before we sign off. Not going to talk too much about DHs, only because we're running out of time, but we will get through our third base ranks here. Start at number 15, I've got Martin Prado. He's got the flexibility to play second as well, but I think you can use him at third. I think the average is decent. It's going to give you a little bit of everything, and I like that Miami lineup. The top six in Miami, maybe as good as any top six in the league right now.
Prado did not make it. He's 16 for me. Headley is my number 15. I don't like the batting average, but I like the ballpark he's playing in, and I like the lineup he's sitting in. So Headley comes in at 15 with David Wright at 14. And DVR, I want to go over David Wright, his year last year, because it's pretty scary. When you look at David Wright, look at his numbers. I'm going to try to pull him up here very quickly. Okay, he hit 269, but wait for it. Here's the home runs, 8 and 54 RBI in 535 at-bats. Scary stuff.
Yeah, I think part of it for me is that he was playing with a shoulder injury. He seems to be healthy now this spring. Loose ligaments in his shoulder. Hasn't been an issue for him so far. Now, hopefully, this is something that doesn't flare up for him. I've got Wright quite a bit higher, but there is definitely some risk there. I mean, just look back at his 2013 numbers, 18 home runs in just 112 games, 21 home runs in 2012. So 300 hitter in both of those years, too. I think last year is one of those injury outlier type seasons for Wright. But he's had a couple of them, so I can definitely see why you've got some reservations about him. I've got Chase Headley at 14, so we're not far off there. He played through a bunch of injuries last year. I like where he's going. If I miss out on the guys ahead of Headley on my list, I feel okay about him as my wait on a third baseman guy to plug in.
At 13, I have Aramis Ramirez. It's his last year, and I think he wants to go out in glory. I worry about the Brewers, but I love the ballpark he hits in, and I like the fact that he wants a swan song, and he may want to be in the playoffs enough to carry this team along with Braun. So I've got Ramirez at 13. I'm not writing him off yet.
I've also got him at 13. I think he's going to get preventative maintenance days off, so the playing time volume will be a little bit lower. Otherwise, he could rank higher on this list, but you expect more like 120 games than 140 or 145. Matt Carpenter is at 12 for me. As long as he stays up near the top of that St. Louis lineup, he can overcome not being a great source of power because he'll be among the league leaders in runs scored in the National League.
Which we often forget about, and that's why I have him at 11, and I've got Manny Machado at 12 simply because he's missed a lot of time. I know he could be better than 12, but right now I'm paying money for him at 12 because he hasn't shown me he can do it.
Yeah, I've got Machado at 11, so we're kind of in agreement here. But I do have Machado.
Really
on my overall list, though, there's a pretty big drop from Machado to Carpenter. So I think I like that upside. Some of the players I've got ranked near Machado have also a lot of upside. Pablo Sandoval is my 10th ranked third baseman.
Derek, you've been cheating off me. You've been reading my paper.
Do you have a paper?
Yeah. Right in front of me, my list.
No, come on now. I like Sandoval, though, because he's getting out of San Francisco, moving into Boston in a better lineup, in a better hitter environment. Expecting a really big year from Pablo Sandoval in year one in Boston.
He's my 10 as well. He's going to bang the ball off the monster every day. I mean, we're going to see doubles from this guy if he can make it to second base. I worry about the body. I worry about it because I do think he hasn't done anything to get better. But the bat still plays. At 9, I have Chris Bryant. And I think we're going to see Chris Bryant probably in April. And if we do, watch out. He could be number 1. But he's going to miss 12 games or something like that. And who knows how, if he's going to play third base or if he's going to play the outfield. I'm not sold on him at third base at 6'5.5". I think ultimately he's going to be a right fielder. He's going to start at third base. I've got him at 9.
Yeah, I've got him at 9 also, just one spot ahead of Sandoval in my overall rankings. And I think the only reason Bryant isn't higher is because most of the players I've ranked ahead of him have longer track records of being very good players, even though Bryant is tearing the cover off the ball this spring. And I look at this list and I'm thinking maybe he's too low. I don't want to be over-aggressive because once the games begin to count, he's going to face the best of the best. He's going to face pitchers that aren't working on things. He's going to face pitchers who made the big league roster, not guys who fell short. His spring training, his Cactus League numbers have been crazy good, but I got to keep him here at 9 for now. Interesting to see if I maybe get more aggressive, though, between now and the NFBC draft coming up on Saturday. David Wright's at 8 on my list. I think last year's struggles were health-related. Again, I like the Mets' improvements to their lineup. You get some power, you get some speed. You should get some batting average from him as well. I think you could see 80 to 85 runs driven in from David Wright with a healthy season.
I've got Evan Longoria at 8. Reluctantly, I put him in my top 15 because he's still a good hitter, but I think he's going to suffer with a lesser lineup than in the past and a lesser ball club in the past, but Longoria is still dangerous.
I've got him a little bit higher, but he's not as high up as he once was on my list. I've got Ryan Zimmerman at 7. He played just enough games at third base to still qualify there. He probably won't qualify at third base after this season, but I think he bounces back in a big way. Talking about a player that reliably can get you at least 275 in batting average, maybe even 285, 20-plus home runs, a boatload of RBIs because of that lineup. Ryan Zimmerman's going to have a big bounce-back year, Bernie.
I've got him at 7 as well. I think he's a terrific player, and I do think he's going to play some third base. I think you're going to see him there. I think with injuries and mixing and matching, he's going to play some third base. I've got him at 7. At 6, I have Seager, because I think the world is at his fingertips. He's in a great lineup. He's a very good hitter, and I like him there.
I've got the Todd father, Todd Frazier, at 6. So the difference between Frazier and Seager to me is very minor. I think the Mariners have a better lineup, so I've actually got Seager at 5. I think Frazier's stolen base contributions will fall a little bit, but I think that actually is something the Reds will continue to do under Brian Price because everybody ran more last year. I think 250, 260 is more likely in batting average from Frazier. Maybe a few more home runs than Seager, but I think Seager's a more balanced player in terms of the 5 rotisserie category. So Frazier at 6, Seager at 5 for me.
And I've got Frazier at 5 and Seager at 6. And the reason I've got Frazier at 5 is I think we've just begun to see the home run stroke, and I think he's going to do it again. It's a nice lineup. I think the Reds are improved offensively. Jay Bruce will be better. I like the club, and I think Frazier is a nice pick at 5. 4 kind of scares me because he's usually my 1 or 2. Here's where I put Beltre. And, you know, this is a drop for me. And it's only because he's not the same guy. He's a year older. Texas is not as good as it used to be. I've got him at 4. He's still a very good hitter.
I've got him a bit higher. I've got Nolan Arenado at 4. I mean, with Arenado, Seager, Frazier, and even Evan Longoria, who I have at 3, I think you can make a case for any one of those guys over the other. And it's really challenging for me to even rank them. But I think Longoria really disappointed in terms of power last year. But he stayed healthy 2 years in a row. I think he's going to finally get back into the high 20s for home runs with a decent batting average, albeit not a great one. I think people are overpaying a little for Arenado in some leagues. But you have to love any hitter who gets a chance to play half his games at Coors. And he showed a lot of signs in the second half of going through a full breakout.
At 3, I have Josh Donaldson. He's got a new lease on life. This guy is going to hit a ton in that lineup and in that ballpark. Josh Donaldson could have been my number 1, but I've got him at 3 simply because of the adjustment to the park and to the division.
I've got Adrian Beltre up at 2. I'm convinced the Rangers get a lot more from Chu and Fielder this year. As a result, they're going to get a lot more from Adrian Beltre too, who really just kind of saw his counting stats dip because of the quality or lack thereof of the hitters around him last season.
I've got Rendon at 2 simply because I don't think the legs and ankles are going to keep him out all year. I don't think you can keep this guy out. He does give me pause, I will admit that. But when he plays, he is in a terrific lineup. He's going to get RBI and run score opportunities. The only issue I have now is running, but I think Rendon is my number 2.
Yeah, see, I've got Rendon. I ranked him as a second baseman, so I didn't put him on this list. I would take him after Beltre, but ahead of Longoria, probably about 30th, 35th overall. So Rendon would be my 3rd ranked third baseman if you're looking at him there instead of in second base. Definitely eligible at both spots. Josh Donaldson tops my list. I think he's going to start beginning the decline phase already. I think he showed some of that last year. His numbers against righties weren't great, but moving into Toronto is going to mask a lot of those flaws, going into a much more hitter-friendly environment and a lineup that top to bottom is better than what Oakland had. I think that's going to benefit his RBI count and his run scored count as well. Josh Donaldson's my top-ranked third baseman.
And my top-ranked third baseman is Nolan Arenado. I want him anywhere I can get him. I love the stroke. I love the contact. I love the park he plays in. Huge gaps in Colorado. He's going to hit him with regularity. He hasn't even reached his potential yet, and that's how good I think this guy's going to be. Nolan Arenado leads my list of third basemen.
Very interesting, because I've seen some aggressive rankings on him, and that is the most aggressive one that I have seen this year. But I know you've seen a pretty fair amount of Nolan Arenado both this spring and I think a little bit even last year too, being at the Rockies or in the NL West, and you get to see the Diamondbacks quite often. Bernie, before we sign off, what do you have coming up at MLB Pipeline?
Well, on the pipeline next week, this week I've talked about some Rule 5 guys, and next week I'm going back to some individual players. So look for player profiles all next week. My next blog, which will be next week, I will start talking about my predictions for the National League and the American League at Bernie's Baseball World. So follow me at Bernie Pleskoff and read the blog at Bernie's Baseball World. And we'll talk some predictions.
Yeah, be sure to check that out. You can check out my Tout Wars recap, rotowire.com/blog. That went up on Monday. Like the team I assembled there, but no time to discuss it in detail right now. That's going to wrap things up for this episode of Short Hops. Views and opinions are those of Derek and Bernie and no other entity. If you'd like to sponsor this podcast, please contact Shannon at rotowire.com. And if you happen to like this podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a nice review on iTunes or Stitcher. It goes a long way to support the work that we do. Bernie, it's been a pleasure as always. Look forward to talking to you again next week after the NFBC.
And next week, Derek, I'm hoping that we will do, and people have asked us about these, guys we like. We'll
yes.
do that next week.
I will empty out that list, mostly because the bulk of my drafts will be over at that time.
Mine are not, and I'm very reluctant, so let's do the NL.
I'm not going to take your guys in grass ball.
No, I know you won't, but, you know, you got to be careful. You and I are exposed. You know, we run around in our underwear. Everybody sees what we've got.
never thought about it that way. That's a good analogy. All right, been a pleasure as always, Bernie. Again, looking forward to doing it again next week. Take care, everybody.
Okay, DVR, take care.